Well, welcome you guys. We're going to go through, if you've already been through some of these, we're going to continue on kind of the same way we were before, going through the Way of Discipleship Studies. That's this book. If you guys have not been through this book before with somebody, raise your hand. Not to shame anybody, just if you're unfamiliar with it. All right, so almost everybody's pretty familiar with it. We got a couple that are learning it for the first time. But basically, the idea behind them is to take someone through what it looks like to become a disciple. And to do it, like Carrie said, I mean, honestly, this lesson could be go listen to Carrie's recording and we'll all sit down and talk through it. But discipleship is a really critical turning point because at this point, we've been through what it looks like to seek God. We've been through what it looks like to build the Bible as your foundation of your life. And we've talked about our sin problem and the way it separates us from God and how the cross is the solution for that. And all of that lays this foundation that leads to the question, now what? Right? Like, what do I do with this? What do I do with the fact that I've got a sin problem and Jesus wants to do something about it? So we're going to talk about this study, discipleship, and we'll just kind of go through what the goals are and explain some tips for how to go through it with somebody. But I wanted to start with my top four tips for going through the study in general. So these are not new. They're not original to me. You probably heard them multiple times this weekend, but they're things that I think are really important when you're going through a study with somebody. And the first one is, go into every study prayed up and prepared, right? Go into it actively praying for your friend, actively praying for the person you're going to be with and prep for it. Like, look at the study ahead of time. Think about, well, I'll go into that later, but be prepared for it. And part of that preparation, like Carrie talked about this morning, is working on that relationship through the week. Right? Like Carrie talked about, if the only time you're connecting with the person you're studying with is on your weekly meeting at the time that you meet up, then it's like a class, right? It's like a class that you're going through together instead of like a friend sharing with someone. And so you want it to be something where you're sharing, not teaching necessarily. And it's something mutual that you're doing. So go into every study, prayed up and prepared. Number two, keep it simple. Keep it super simple. Jesus taught in really simple terms. It was not complicated. And let them know this isn't complicated. Like this here, if it sounds like that's what he's saying, it's because that's what he's saying. There's not that much to it. And when you talk with them, you know, talk about how they're logical and how they fit with other things they know to be true, right? Like I know that when my tooth is rotting, and that scares me because I don't like the dentist, and then I ignore it for a long time and medicate it, it does not get better, right? That does not improve over time. I know that's true. Everyone who's had a toothache knows that that's true, right? And yet, we ignore that when it comes to God, right? If my life is rotting and I just medicate it and ignore it, my life does not get better, right? But we know we've got to go to the dentist and then we ignore and bury all our life problems. It's not complicated. We know that's true. That's basic logic. And that's what Jesus is talking about. So you don't have to be, all these lessons are taught and modeled by unschooled, ordinary people, right? Nothing special except that God got a hold of them and did some special things through them. It's simple. Number three, be real and open and personal. Be real and open and personal, right? Have a part of your prep work is having examples in mind that you can share and then be ready to bring in other examples that apply when you get answers that maybe you weren't expecting and help your note taker to follow your lead, right? So every time we do one of these studies, we have someone who is leading the study and then you have the friend that you're studying with that's learning how to be a disciple. And then along with that, you have someone taking notes with you and that you're teaching to kind of guide as well. And so we've talked about how from the very beginning, you can talk about, hey, you know what, like we're studying right now and they're learning how to do this, but someday they're going to be sitting in my seat and you'll be taking notes, right? And you'll be guiding someone else through it. And then eventually you'll be teaching someone else to teach someone to do this. And it carries on and it carries on. And it's okay to say that to someone who is not a disciple yet, you know, who's just thinking at this point in the study, if they're still sticking it out, they're curious. Right? Like they, at worst, they're curious and they're thinking this through. And that's number four, get specific and dream for your people early. Dream for them from the very beginning. And don't just make stuff up, right? Like don't just say like, I could see you being this and just pull some generic thing out. But if you're spending time with them, if part of your prep work is building that relationship outside of the studies and covering it in prayer, then you're going to have ideas for how God could work with them, right? If you ever have a friend that you get really close to and you fall in love with them and you're like, man, like I love this person so much, I could see them doing that. Like I could, man, they'd be such a blessing in this role. Or, you know, that story they told would be killer if somebody was going through it. And really, I could see someone needing that. And I don't have that story. And only they can share it. Well, don't keep that stuff in your head. Tell them, like share it with them and dream for them. So there's some basic stuff to kind of, as you're going into your studies, some things to think about and bring to them. So the goal with the discipleship study, at the beginning of your study guide, you have study goals that we're trying to go through, and then it'll break it down as you go. So our goal is to help the student know what a disciple is in a practical way. And so this is a critical turning point of this is the now what. What is a Christian? What is a disciple? What is someone who's following Jesus? What do they look like? How do they live? What am I signing up for? Right? Help the student grasp the depth and the seriousness of the commitment that Christ is calling them to. And it's so important that you paint that picture clearly. What you don't want is to get vague with somebody about what a disciple is and what a disciple does, and then you didn't go into detail, and then they don't show up for 3 weeks after they got baptized, and now you're having to like feel like you're tacking all this other stuff on because they didn't really understand what all was involved in it. So we want to be clear and upfront so we're not playing catch up later. And then to show that these traits that we're going to go through are part of the DNA of a disciple. Like they're necessary in everyone. You're not going to find a disciple who doesn't look like this. So let's talk first of all with what a disciple is. When you go through what a disciple is, you start with a question. What do you think of when you hear the following words? And you ask them, what do you think of when you hear the word Christian? Right? What's a Christian? Well, a Christian could be like anybody who does this after a touchdown. Right? Or like anybody who goes to church, or you hear all kinds of stuff about what's a Christian. It's usually like anybody who signs up, who wears the Jesus t-shirts, right? Who acts like they like Jesus. And then you ask, like, what do you think of when you hear the word disciple? And like, oh man, like that's someone who's really serious about it, right? Like that's someone who's actively following, who's really trying, who's maybe an apostle, right? That's something that people relate to that a lot. What do you think about when you hear the word church? And when you hear the word church, like a lot of people, oh, it's somewhere people go, and you know, on Sunday mornings, that's where they go. So then we get into Acts 11, 25 through 26. And you've heard this a lot if you've been in these studies before, but when someone says chaining your Bible lesson, what they mean is you start, so in the back of my Bible, I've got the first verse of each study. And then if I go to Acts 11, 25, then it's got it marked. And then there's another lesson or another, the next verse is written in the margin. Okay, now go to this one. And you can kind of go through and follow along in your Bible, because this is literally just verses and questions, right? This isn't some man-made thing that we just came up with. This is just verses and then asking what the verses mean. So in Acts 11, 25 through 26, it says, then Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. And then it comes to that critical statement you've heard a couple times this weekend. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. And so that's significant, not just because the apostles or the believers there were living like little Christs, and that's true, but disciple and Christian were never supposed to be two different things. And so when we live in a culture where Christian is just like anybody who wears the t-shirt or crosses themselves, right? Or anybody who says they like Jesus, and that a disciple is someone really serious, then we've gotten off base a little bit, right? That they're all supposed to be the same thing. And so when you're walking someone through it, you know, when we say like, what does it mean to be a Christian? Well, everything we talk about with the disciple, which is used way more often, is going to relate. That's what you're going to be signing up for, right? And we go through, and you know, it's funny when you ask people that don't come from a church background, how many times do you think the word Christian is in the Bible? They're going to be like, it's got to be 100, right? Like that's what the whole thing's about. And you tell them, no, it's only in there 3 times, maybe 2, maybe 3, depending on which translation you're looking at. And you ask, how many times is the word disciple in there? Like, I don't know, between 3 and 100. And it's 120 times. That's the Jesus' favorite word for a follower of his. And so when you realize those are the same thing, that all Christians are supposed to be serious about what they're doing. When you were living in a culture where following Jesus could get you fed to lions, there weren't a lot of nominal Christians, right? There weren't a lot of people wearing Jesus t-shirts on the street because it helped them get a job or it made them look more, you know, friendly. No, as you were taking your life in your hands, you were potentially getting disowned by your family. Well, now we're in a situation where it's the opposite. You could put a little fish on your business and you might get more business. You can play Christian music in your lobby and you might get more Google reviews. Like that's, it's easy. It's palatable to be a Christian. And so we're breaking through some of that and redefining some of that. And then if you set up an environment where you can be a Christian without any cost or real commitment, then a lot of people are going to do that because that's a lot easier than doing it Jesus way. And so we live in a culture where everybody's seeing people who live that way. And we're breaking through that and starting something different. And then church is the people that make up, you know, the disciples of Christ. It's not a place you go to, and so you're redefining that as well. It's the people of God. So let's talk about what a disciple is. And we go to the next verse, which is Luke 6:40. And it says, a student or disciple, it's the same word in the Greek. So when you see student and disciple, that's actually the same word. They just use the different ones in the translation where they think it'll fit best. A disciple, a student, is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. Now, how many of you guys went to public school? How many of you went to like traditional classroom setting, right? So traditional classroom setting, I am not trying to be like my teacher, right? I had a lot of teachers I actively did not want to be like, right? I had one, their building was about to be torn down and he would smoke out the back while he's teaching us. And then when the administration came by, he'd throw it away real quick. Like, no, I'm good. Like he was a great history teacher. I didn't want to be like him. He was a mess, right? And so the goal is not to be like your teacher. The goal is information transfer, right? You sit in a room and then you acquire the information and then you use the information. And then if you're like me, you purge it immediately to make room for more information, right? You cram and you purge and that's it. And this is that's not the way Jesus did things. Jesus didn't gather a bunch of people and say, hey, come listen to me for 3 years, right? When he wanted someone to be with him, what did he say? Follow me. Follow me. And then along the way, deny yourself. And he taught them all these other things. But they learned that not because he told them, but because he told them and then showed them. And so a student, think like instead of a classroom setting, think about the word like apprentice, right? Or mentoring, where you're like spending time with them and you're trying to become like your mentor. The mentors in my life, I choose people that I want to be like. I want to have marriages like theirs. I want to have lives like theirs and the reputation they have and the impact they have. Like, I don't want to just learn the information they have. I want to be like them. And so when you think about like the difference between a lectureship and an internship or a mentorship, it's a completely different dynamic. And so when you go through these, you know, all these things that a disciple is, and more than anything else, they're a teacher or a student rather. And the point that we want to make here is this is from the very beginning. This isn't something you have to work up to. Like you're a disciple from the start. You don't like level up. You don't like start off as baby Christian and then you become like a half disciple and then you're a full disciple. Like right from the start, you're all the way following Jesus, right? He wasn't like, all right, you know, John and Peter right here, and then Thomas and, you know, and Bartholomew, you guys follow like 20 feet behind, and then you guys are behind them, and you just, no, it's like we're all disciples together. We're all serious about this together and following Jesus together. So that's what a disciple is someone who's striving to become like his teacher, not just to get the information, but to be like his teacher and to become more and more like Jesus. So let's go on to what a disciple does. A disciple is someone who does three things. And as we go through these three things, we want to ask specifically, how do you live this out? Like, what does this look like in each of these things? So you go through a trait and then you don't just, again, we're not just trying to disseminate information. We're trying to bring about transformation. We're trying to bring about something lasting. So trait one is a disciple holds to the teachings of Jesus. A disciple holds to the teachings of Jesus. And again, we didn't just make this up. We didn't say, hey, I think a disciple should be like this. We go off scripture. So what does Jesus say in John 8:31? If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Remember when I said this was simple, right? How do you know what a disciple does? What does that mean to you, right? There's not eight different ways to take that statement, right? If you hold to my teachings, you are my disciple. If you don't hold to my teachings, you are not my disciple, right? This is real simple math, right? This is not complicated. What does it mean to hold to Jesus' teachings? What do you guys think? What are some examples of how you hold to his teachings? You're living. What's that?
You're living.
You live them out. Absolutely. That's the main one for sure. What else does it look like to hold to his teachings? Think about holding on to something. What does it look like to hold on to his teachings? You take, keep it with you. Absolutely. I don't just leave it behind, right? If you don't say I'm holding on to my water bottle, if you left it back at home, right? You keep it with you, carry it around, his teachings around everywhere. Absolutely. What else? Yeah, it's visible to others, right? 100%, right? If I'm holding to my teachings, his teachings, other people are going to see that. What happens if someone tries to take it away from you? They won't, right? If you're holding on, right? No, you can't. They're not going to get it from you, right? So if I'm holding, all of those things are true. And when you're talking with someone, that's what they're going to talk about. Like if you say, if you had a death grip on something, what would that look like, right? If you were holding on for dear life, what would that look like? I think about in relationship, what does it look like to hold on to a relationship, right? And in my marriage, when we don't always act the best to each other, and there's times where it gets really hard, and we're going to hold on to our vows. We're going to hold on to each other. And that means that when I feel like running away, when I feel like yelling and slamming the door, I don't do that. I'm holding on. I'm hanging on to what we've got. I'm not going to let that go because it's important, because it's something that I've committed to and that's a blessing in my life. And so then you ask the question, can you hold to a teaching if you don't know it? Well, that's pretty simple. No, you can't hold to a teaching that you don't know. So we've got to stay with it and make sure we're staying in the Word and preparing ourselves for being in the world and living it out, like you said. And then can you know a teaching and not hold to it? Well, absolutely. I know all kinds of things. Do you have any idea how many diet plans I've read in my life? Right? I know 18 different ways to lose weight. I am doing none of them, right? But I'm familiar with them. I know I could teach them, right? I know I couldn't model them, but I could teach them, right? And so we it's very possible to know teachings and not hold to them. And that's important to recognize. When you say, like, when the world's number one problem with Christians is that they are hypocrites, right? That's not new. Like, we know that. We know that you can know a teaching and not hold to it. It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that you see that in the church like you see it anywhere else. Acts 2:42 says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings, right? They were all about it. They stayed with it. Now, in Acts 2:42, anyone who knows their Bible, how long have the people in Acts 2:42 been Christians? Like 10 minutes, right? Like it's right after, right? A day maybe, right? A couple days after. These people that are holding on tight to Christ's teachings are doing it literally from day one, right? This is something we do from the start. In 1 John 2, 3-6, it says, we know that we have come to know him if we obey his commands, right? If we live them out, not just if we know him, but if we hold on to him and live him out. The man who says, I know him, but doesn't do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But if anyone obeys his word, God's love is truly made complete in him. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. So if you are not walking like Jesus did, can you claim to be in him? It's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward. So we know that we're his if we hold to his teachings. Now, you can do two things at this point. You can either say, okay, point two, and you just hope they get it. Or you can stop for a second and say, what would it look like for you to hold on to his teachings, right? Not like you in general, right? Not Rennie. What would it look like for Rennie to hold on to his teachings? Like sometimes you hear a lesson, you're like, oh, I can't wait for that guy to hear that lesson, right? And that's an easy deflection point of like, no, you needed to hear that lesson, right? What would it look like for you to do something different that would hold on to his teachings? And so I'll give a personal example, right? I'll give them a minute to think it through. When you ask someone a question like that, they got to process. Like that was one thing I really had to learn. Don't jump in, like let it be uncomfortable for 30 seconds and let them think. If I've never been to church and someone asks me, what does it look like to hold on to his teachings? I need more than 30 seconds to process that and come up with an answer. So don't jump to their rescue right away. Let them think it through. Give them some room to process it. And then share your own example and be real with it, right? When God's word becoming my source of truth was one of the most important changes in my whole life. When that became my foundation, when I started holding on to his teachings, man, I thought every day I looked in the mirror, I thought something different about myself, right? There were days where I was okay with myself, and there were a few of those. There were a lot more days where I looked in the mirror and I thought I was trash, where I thought about all the things. Anybody else have a highlight reel of the worst things they've done in the last 6 months that just plays over and over again? I'm really good at it. I am not, my church knows this, I'm not a very creative person. I can't play an instrument. I'm not an artist. Like, there are not a lot of things that I am creative in, but I am really good at coming up with worst case scenarios and highlight reels of my failures. I am a genius at that stuff. And so that was what I lived in for so long. I would sit in my room and I would think about what a loser I am. And I needed someone to come in and redefine who I am. I needed someone to come in and say, that's not what I call you, and my authority wins, that you're my son, that I have great things in mind for you. When someone read the story of Gideon for the first time to me, and they said, this hero was a coward. And I'm like, well, shoot, I'm a coward. I could do that. Like, there's something, he's not done with me just because I've wimped out of every fight I've ever been in. And there was a new foundation for me to stand on. And that set me free. That let me grow. You know, it brought this stability. I didn't know what the point of my life was. You know, there was a really dark time where I got to where I'm like, I don't see any compelling reason for me to wake up tomorrow. I don't see any reason why this world would be different if I was here the next day. And that's a danger. That's a slippery slope, right? That's not a place you want to live in for very long. And it took someone coming at the right time and saying, there is a purpose for your life. You know, there's something you can stand behind. And I've gotten to wake up every day without any doubt on why I'm there, why I'm at work, why I'm with my family, why I get to talk to that person that day. I have no doubts at all about that. And that's a different way to live. And when you start sharing that with people, that there's one thing to say, a disciple holds to Jesus' teachings, point two, right? And there's a difference between saying that and then saying, this is what holding on to Jesus' teachings did to me. It changed my whole life. I'm different now, and my kids are different now, and my wife is different now, and my family is different now, and the people that I get to interact with are different now because of that. All right, so we've got to make it personal, and we've got to make it real. Trait two, a disciple loves one another. Again, this is straight out of Scripture. And it's not like, if you parse this verse this way and look at six different translations, you might get this point. It's right there in black and white. In John 13, 34 and 35, and now I give you a new command, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. If you have love for one another, then everyone will know that what? You are my disciples, right? If you love one another. He says it like three times in there because he really wants us to get this point. This is a pretty critical one. Who's the one another that a disciple has to love? Other disciples, right? The church, to love the church. And now that, again, is something we're having to break through. And I'm not just talking about loving being at church. There's a lot of people that love to be at church, right, who go, and there are so many churches with tens of thousands of people that you can go to where you can go and have an experience, right? And you can go and it's just you and God and then you leave and that's it. And we've got this culture of like, Robert talked about this in a sermon a little while back. The typical church, American church experience is I park and then I walk in and someone gives me a greeting and then I go beyond them and someone gives me a coffee. And then I go to class and someone gives me a lesson. And then we sing and the praise team gives me a song. And then I go to the sermon and someone gives me a sermon and then I leave. And I say, behold, I have fellowshipped. That's not fellowship, right? If you go and you take and you take and you take and you take and you leave. I remember the first time we went to, all I've known as a Christian really for the most part is a discipleship culture. And so I went to a church one time and the second it was over, everybody scattered like roaches when you turn the light on. And I was like, what is this? And this is gross, right? Like I was like, this is wild. And that's a normal church experience. And when people have like tried the church thing, that's what a lot of people know. And so when you're explaining what loving the church is like, you've got to reframe it for them a little bit and say, look, if you love the way Jesus loved, Not just if you like being around him, but if you love the way, how did Jesus love? He got all up in your business, right? You've been married five times and you're not married to the guy you're with right now. We're going to talk about that, right? In love. We're going to talk about that gently and respectfully, but we're going to talk about it, right? We're not just going to pretend like everything's okay. Churches, and then the other way that Jesus loved was it was not about getting, it was about giving, right? Church is not about me. Being with the church is not about me. I'm not thinking like, you know, there's a couple different filters we can go through, right? We can say, I'll be okay if I don't come around for a couple weeks, right? And maybe you won't lose your faith if you don't come around for a couple weeks, right? Like you probably could, your faith probably could survive that. And if that's the filter you're going through, you go when you feel like going and you don't go when you don't feel like going, right? You engage when you feel like engaging and you check out when you feel like checking out. But if your filter is, who needs me today, right? Can my family afford for me to check out and neglect what God would do through me today? And the answer to that is absolutely not, right? Like there's someone who's going to come. I guarantee you someone's going to come on the week you're not there. I've never in my life missed a Sunday for work since I've been a Christian. And I had one work meeting that I was finally like, they've been hounding me. I'm like, fine, I'll go to this one. And a guy from my company went to church for the first time ever. And I was the only one who could have connected with him like that. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, yes, Lord, I see you. Yeah. Right? Like, all right, I'm fine. You know, it's like, man, God's got a design for you. He's got something that you can do that no one else can do. You have a story that I do not have. And you're there to share that. Everything God gives you, he gives you to share. And so that's my filter is, man, like people need me there. Like God's going to do things through me. And listen, I couldn't have believed that all these build on each other, right? Unless I'm holding to his teachings, there is no one who could have convinced me that I'm essential for anything, right? I did not feel essential. My dream was to work in the background and have no one bother me, right? That was my life ambition. And then God brought me, he's like, all right, we're going to do some stuff, right? This is not for you. You can work in the background. You can work behind the scenes, but you're not going to live your whole life back there. We're going to do some things together. It's not just saying, can I get away with it? It's saying, what can God do through me in here? Walking in with my eyes open, ready and expecting God to do something through me, ready and expecting God to bring someone around. Man, there's people that I don't know how long God worked on that guy before he came in. Right? But that could have ruined like 6 months of work. Like God could have done like a car wreck, a marital dispute, you know, like a, you know, there's a TV show he heard some compelling message on. Like God could have done 7 different things to get him in and he came back around and it worked out. But man, it's like, oh, like you don't know how much God has done to put you in somebody's path because you are dangerous. You are so dangerous to what Satan's trying to do. You have got something to share that is so powerful as a disciple, and he's just waiting for you to do it. And then we can ask someone, all right, let's get practical. If a disciple loves one another, what would stop me from loving one another? Not what would stop Chase, not what would stop Mike, what would stop me and my life specifically? Not this general answer of like, oh, it could rain one day and my tire could go flat. No, like what in my life specifically would stop me from actively loving other disciples the way that Jesus loved his disciples? You know, so, and then I'll give them some time and then I'll answer. I used to isolate. I used to ghost people when I was before ghosting was a thing. I ghosted before it was cool, right? Like, you know, when I was anxious or stressed or depressed, that was my default. You didn't get a text back from me. You didn't get a call back from me. You didn't see me for a couple weeks, right? That was my default setting because when I'm already beating myself up, the last thing I need is you piling on. You guys ever been there? Right. By the time you come and correct me, I've been railing on myself for months, right? Like you're late to the party, right? And so that's how I felt. And then, you know, it took, you know, first of all, any other recovering isolators in here? Right. Like I know I'm not alone in that. That's most of the room, right? And I've got, somehow I produced Kaylee, who's the little mermaid, right? She just wakes up saying, I want to be where the people are, right? Like, that's not me. I don't know where I'm blessed by her and she challenges me with it. But man, like God taught me that the times when I most want to be alone and avoid you guys is the time that I need you the most. And that is so gross, right? Like, I don't want to hear that, but it's so true and it's so necessary. And again, like not complicated stuff, right? Anyone in here who's tried the isolation thing, how'd that go for you? Right? Not great. Me in a bad space, isolated with no other voice in the room, does not improve things. Right? I need another voice in the room. I need someone else to come in and tell me something true. Tell me something real. And then other people need that too. And so, you know, and then the other thing that's cool is like, you know, God talks all the time about you'll comfort people with the comfort you've received. right? There's nothing better for someone who isolates than to watch someone else who was an isolator come in and say, listen, I didn't want to be here 6 months ago, but these people kept dragging me back, right? And now I'm here and I'm better for it. Like, you can do it too, right? I love how flawed everyone in the Bible is, because you look at them, you're like, man, that guy was screwed up, right? And there's hope for me too, right? Like, I was a mess. And still am sometimes, and I'm here, and we're doing this thing. Me and Jesus are doing this thing, and me and Jesus and his people are doing this thing, and let's do it together. There's hope in that. If you come in and you're like, I have never struggled with that ever, I hope that works out for you. That is so depressing, right? Like, I need someone like that. I've got a story that, you know, frankly, Kaylee doesn't have, and then Kaylee's got stories that I don't have, you know, and we need that. We need to be around each other. So we need to love people the way, and specifically love other disciples the way that Jesus loved them. In Acts 2:44, it says, all the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods they gave to anyone who they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts, and they broke bread in their homes and they ate together. Right? Look at the things and walk them through. Like, does that look like going to a church service where you just like have an experience and leave? No, they're together every day. They're sharing with each other. They're sacrificing for each other. Right? If you go to our church and you go out to lunch, we're going to drag you to lunch, right? You're going to come to lunch unless you are run away the other direction, right? And if you have money, that's great. And if you don't have money, you're still going to eat, right? I guarantee it, right? We're going to make it work. Like, you're going to share with each other. You're going to be there for each other. They shared their possessions. They met together. They spent time in each other's homes. If you haven't had anyone else in your home, like, that's part of what a disciple does. And if your home isn't as big as you'd like, or as clean as you'd like, or as put together as you'd like, anyone who knows Acts 2, these people were not in ideal situations, right? A lot of the people had come in from out of town. They're like way over long house guests, right? If you guys were at family vacation in January, you know, we got snowed out at our venue, and the church here took on like 300 college students out of nowhere, and we're in basements and we're piled up. I think one house had like 25 people in it, just sleeping on air mattresses in an unfinished basement, right? It was like, that's amazing, right? And then we got to go home and we got to tell that story, and we got to share with people, like, we just made it work, right? It wasn't ideal. And the people, if everyone there was like, man, look, my basement's unfinished, it's like half done, I'm really embarrassed about it, I've been working on it for 5 years, I don't really want anyone to know that, then those 20 people wouldn't have had anywhere to stay, and they wouldn't have had all the amazing experiences they had on that trip. But they got over themselves long enough to say, you know what, God gave me the house, I'm here, it's not exactly how I'd have it look, but Jesus can use it. And my life is the same way, right? If my life isn't as pretty or as expansive or as generous as I would like it to be, it's still worth sharing. Jesus still gave it to you, and he can use it, and we've got to share it. In 1 John 3:16 and 18, it says, this is how we know what love is. This is our definition of love. Christ Jesus laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. And I would challenge you guys, by the time you get to this study, I would say your friend should have seen that already. They should have something they can point back to and be like, oh man, that's right. Like, you left your family for me for the last 4 weeks. Right? You could have been playing with your kids. You could have been going off and doing your own thing. You could have binged a whole season by now of whatever, right? And you chose to be with me. Like, you've sacrificed. Remember, man, we went out to dinner. You already paid for me, and I know you were tight, right? Like, you were hopefully at this point when you're spending time, if all you've done is just gone through four classes with them, then they're not going to get it like they're going to get it if you're spending time with them and investing in them and caring for them, sharing personal things with them. So before we move on to the next point, we need to say, okay, what does loving one another look like? And don't let them say, like, I go to church. No, what for you, what does that look like? What could you bring to the table and love other disciples in a different way? Trait number three, and this all builds on each other, right? If I hold to his teachings and then I love one another, and then number three will always happen if those things are true. A disciple bears fruit. There is real change that happens when you become a disciple, when you hold to his teachings, and when you love one another, then people are going to see transformation in you, and then they'll want to know more. They'll want to know why you're able to do these things, why you're able to be different than the way you were before. And especially when they see the kind of love that Jesus is talking about. So John 15, 5 through 8 says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. So his goal for us is growth. From the very beginning, his goal is growth, not to sit here and do nothing, but to continue to grow in our relationship with him. It says, you are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he's like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit. Doing what? Showing yourselves to be my disciples, right? What does a disciple do? How do you know? They bear fruit. When you've had a teacher come around in town and they're talking about Jesus, what did Paul say? By their fruit, or Jesus said, what, by their fruit, you will know them. Right? You'll know them by the things that they produce in their lives. And there's a couple different things that we produce, right? Number one is the fruit of the Spirit, which is a changed life. In Galatians 5:22, it says, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Right? Are people, if someone knew you a year ago, if someone knew you 6 months ago, and they know you now, is there more of that stuff in your life than there was before, right? Because I would argue if you are holding on to Jesus' teachings and you're taking advantage of the support that you have, you'll grow in this stuff, right? Just by rubbing up against people, Anthony talked about how awkward and uncomfortable it is to be around people that are different from you. I am not good at small talk. I am really bad and I have to give people rides. And I come from this weird family where we didn't listen to the radio when we drove. So I don't listen to the radio when I drive. And people are like pretty sure I'm a serial killer because we're just like driving for 20 minutes and I'm not saying anything and there's nothing playing. And that is so scary for people in this culture, right? Where we live off Facebook reels and 15 second attention span. And they're just sitting there, it's terrifying. And I'm like, in my brain, I am screaming, be more interesting. And I can't do it. And then the more I scream that, the more afraid I am to say something dumb. And it's just this horrible cycle. I don't know if anybody's been there, but but I have something to offer. And people will see that. And just the fact, I can't tell you how many people I have left the car thinking, they are never coming back. And then they'll say later, man, it really meant a lot. You gave me that ride. And sometimes they'll even say it was super weird, but I really meant a lot. And I met a lot of cool people because you got me there. And so I survived the ride and then I got to the good stuff. And I'm like, awesome, go Jesus, right? We need each other. And so it's, you know, we need that. And we have so much to offer and you will be more patient with people after surviving things like that with them. Right. If you go on this trip and you get an Airbnb together and someone snores and someone ate your leftovers and like all this stuff, like you're going to grow in your self-control and your gentleness or you'll kill each other. Right. But one way or another, right, if you stay together and you stick it out, you're going to grow in all these things that that you're expected to produce. And then when you produce that fruit, you get the other kind of fruit. And this always comes along with it. And that's the fruit of reproduction, right, of making more like you. And if you love like Jesus did, you will not be okay with leaving people where they're at, right? I love my kids and I want to see them grow. And when you have a kid that's not developing, there's a term for that, right? It's called failure to thrive. And it is concerning when a three-year-old is still doing the same things at five, right? You have concerns about that because you want more for them. You want to help them get more freedom and more understanding and more functionality in this world. I don't want my kid to go out in the world helpless and confused and unprepared and not fit. The kind of love I have for my kids like that is how you learn to feel about other people. When you go to someone at work and you're like, I don't say this out loud, but you're just thinking like, you don't know how to function in this world, right? Like you're telling me stuff that you haven't told your husband. Right? You're telling me stuff that you don't tell anybody. Like, who am I? Like, you need more support. You got to meet this guy, right? Like, you got to meet Chris. You got to meet Mike. I know people that you need to meet. that are going to help you through some of this stuff. And I love you too much to leave you there. And so I'm going to strive to show you that love by bringing you around and trying to convince you that there's something more, right? And part of that's the study. And you can tell them, like, that's why we're doing this. Why? That's why we're here. That's why we're sitting down and talking about this. Like, break the fourth wall. You know, like, this is why we're in this study together. Because I care about you and I love you too much to leave you where you're at, because someone loved me too much to leave me where I'm at. In Philippians 1, 22 through 23, it says, if I'm going to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I know that I will remain and I will continue with all of you for your progress and your joy in the faith. Paul's life was super hard. Like, when he goes through his list of things he'd been through, like shipwrecked multiple times, right? One time he survives a shipwreck miraculously, and then a snake jumps out of a bush and bites him in the hand. And you're like, come on. Have you ever seen like Ace Ventura 2 where he like gets a spear in his leg? He's like, ah, they throw another spear. And he's like, you know, and sometimes in our life, we're like, the snake is too much. Like, why are we doing this? Take me home, right? Like, Jesus, just take the wheel, like, take me home. And Paul's like, no, I'm going to stay around because you're worth it, right? And life is really hard. And I lost my cousin the other day, and I lost my uncle the next day, and I lost my job the next day, but you're worth sticking around for. And I'm glad Jesus didn't just call me home, because now I get to be with you and I get to share with you and love on you and show you something different. It's worth it. And then the other thing to remind him of over and over again is, how much did the disciples in Acts 2 know when they were sharing with their friends? What did they know? How long had they been a Christian? Couple days. What did they know? Jesus is Lord and I need him, and I was dead in the water without him. That's enough. That's a good starting point. That is enough to start bearing fruit. That's all you need. And you grow from there and you get more effective from there, but you grow from there by doing the thing, right? You don't gain expertise and then start studying with people. That's not how wisdom works. You can get smart by learning from a book, but you can't get wise until you start applying it, right? In biblical wisdom, you learn by doing. You can't get ready and then start studying with people. You get ready by studying with people. The first time I ever studied with somebody, I was at a Boston market, and this girl was there, and I'd been a few times, and we, you know, just talked, and you know, I knew her name. That was really it. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm supposed to be reaching out to people. So I'm like, hey, you want to study the Bible sometimes? And she said, yes. And I'm like, awesome. Let me have the mac and cheese and the cream corn. You know, like, oh, yes, okay, next Thursday I'll be here. And then I'm like, let's meet at Boston Market, because that's where you want to be when you work there all week, right? I don't know what I'm doing. And so I invited her to work, to study at her work, which is so awkward. But she said yes, which is awesome. And then I get there and I pull out my Bible and she goes, oh, you're not using that, are you? And I'm like, no. I put it down and we just talked for a little bit and I never went back. Like, that was my first ever experience studying with somebody. I didn't know a thing and I was terrified. I totally bombed it. And if that had been the end of me studying with people, then there are a lot of people whose lives would be a lot worse, right? But I learned from that and I grew from that. Now, if I'd never had that experience, I would have always wondered, like, you know, would I die if I bombed a study? Well, evidently not. You know, I'm still here, right? Like, I did as bad as you can do. I would argue that's maybe the worst study that's ever been done. And yet we're here and we're still working and we're still operating and we're being effective. And in Mark 1, 16 through 18, it says, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men, right? If fishing is your livelihood, if it's the thing that's going to feed your family, if you go out and you don't catch something one day, do you quit? Right? If you're just doing it as a hobby, you can get frustrated. But if it's life and death, if you're fishing for your family, because this is what's going to keep them alive, you don't quit just because you don't catch something the first day. Right? This is life and death for your friends. This is the difference between them living in a miserable marriage, running through the same dumb circles over and over again, just like you did, or getting free from that and starting something new. And your willingness to disciple them, to be with them, is what's going to determine that. And in Luke 19:10, it says, I came to seek and save the lost, right? And in Acts 2, 46 through 47, it says, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved, right? And there's life change that comes from being with Christ, and there's reproduction that comes from that. And so, man, like, you know, how would it affect you if you looked back and you saw someone that you really loved whose life was different because you shared with them, you know, and ask that of them and talk, like, how would that feel, right? That's awesome. Like, that's exciting. And we want to help them apply it. There is no greater blessing than, A, learning how to love someone like Jesus loved them. That's a huge blessing, just to learn how to love, right? And then to have the people that you love, have their lives changed completely, is incredible. And it's better than anything else. And finally, we go to the commitment of a disciple. And this is really such a critical breaking point. When your goal is not to add to your baptism tally for the year. Your goal is to make a disciple, right? And so if they don't want to be a disciple, right, baptizing isn't going to do any good, right? The goal is to help build a disciple. So we're going to talk about what goes into that. And in Luke 14, 25 through 34, it says, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who doesn't carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Now, I would encourage you guys, stop there and don't keep going, because that's a lot. If you've never heard that before, you don't want to be like, yeah, hate your father and mother. And then let's talk about this tower you got to build. No, like, you got to, let's stop and talk about that, right? What does it mean? What's he communicating when he says you need to hate your father and mother, your brothers and sisters, your own life, right? Well, it's you can ask them that, right? And they may do all kinds of things with it. But the point is that this is covenant language. When a nation had made a treaty with someone else, they would say in their treaty, there are legal documents from this time that said, who you love, I will love, and who you hate, I will hate. And what they're saying is, if you go to war, then I'm at war, right? Like, I will have your back in all circumstances. My allegiance is to you. I won't make other treaties that go against that. I'm not going to have a side piece, right, that I'm hanging out with. Right? Like, this is, you're my girl. You're my one that I'm with. You're my partner in all of this. Right? And so I will love who you love and I will hate who you hate. And what we're saying to Jesus is, if we go to war, if there's something where they're calling for my allegiance and you're calling for my allegiance, my loyalty is to you every time. Right? If my wife says, we need to stop doing this church thing. If my wife says, I'm tired of you always being around them, then they come first, like the God comes first. And that's really hard. And we need to ask, like, man, who is that for you? Like, who might have more of your heart than God does, right? Who would that be? Is it your kids, right? Or if your kid signs up for a soccer tournament that's going to take him away for 10 weeks, you know, and you're travel baseball every week, right? Or, you know, if your kid has whatever, you know, insert thing here. Right? Is it hard for you to love God more than you love your kid? Is it hard for you to love God more than your prospective boyfriend or girlfriend that you're dying for? Right? Even if it could be someone you don't even have yet, right? That's one I've had to bring up of like, man, I know you're hungry for something. You know, can you love God more than you love the idea of being with somebody? Right? And you need to get personal with this. You need to let them give you an answer that's real. And then again, share what's hard for you. Share, man, I love being the hero. There is nothing better than being the knight in shining armor for my wife. And there are so many times I want to come to her rescue. And there have been times where I've had to say, baby, you are a disciple and you've got this and I need to go do this. And I know you're asking for support right now. And look, if my wife needs support, I am there. But there are other times where she feels like she needs support and she doesn't, she's got it. And I've had to say, you can do that. I went off and, you know, mentored with or got some mentorship from Lynn for like a whole summer when she was pregnant with our youngest. And that was a hard summer for her, but I knew it needed to happen for our ministry to grow. And we just sat down. I'm like, you're going to do this and we're going to be okay. And I'm going to call you every day and I'll, you know, but you're going to do this. And it was really hard not to come to the rescue and say, I've got you, honey. Like, don't worry. Like, look at me like that hero. But there were things that needed to be done. And then he goes on, he says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he's able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he's not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Any of you who doesn't give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Everything. Does that count your major at school? Does that count your ambitions and your dreams? Does that count your job? Does that count your relationships? Does that count, all of your personality, your identity, right? Who I think I am, right? If I'm the guy who has to work in the background and that's who I am and God isn't going to tell me any different and God's like, hey, go teach that lesson, right? What do we say in there? Don't tell God no, right? Like he knows better than I do. And you're teaching this to your friend too and saying, man, we've got to surrender. Like the things we were doing were not working and now we've got to do something different. And all the amazing blessings that come from being a disciple come from God being in control. And that's where we go to this illustration you have in there. And you know, beware when I try to draw an illustration, but you can draw, like I draw an H and that's my chair. That's the best I've got is lowercase h. I'm like, that is a chair. Take my word for it. And then there's three different scenarios you can lay out, right? There's the S for self and the C for Christ. And you can say, man, I can sit on my own throne and Christ can be on the outside of it. I can sit on the throne and I can take advice from Christ like he's my advisor. And that's how a lot of people like Jesus, right? He's my buddy. He's a good teacher. He tells me things that are helpful. And then when I'm done with him, I tell him to go away, right? Like I'm going to go to the club tonight, but I'll see you on Monday, right? Like, no, that's. And then there's Jesus on the throne and he's dictating terms to me. And you can ask him like, which one's a disciple? What does a disciple look like? And everyone's going to know by this point, Jesus is on the throne, right? And then we say, which one are you? And we've got to be honest about that and say, man, and listen, again, if you're involved in their life, you know pretty much where they're at, you know, and it's okay to say like, they're like, oh man, Jesus is on that throne, baby. And you're like, man, not based on last weekend, you know, like not based on, you know what, like you haven't been to church in 3 weeks, you know, like it's okay to say like, I'm not so sure. Maybe we need to review those things again, right? Let's look at what a disciple does. Let's look at what a disciple is. And we don't glaze past this. This is not six studies and then baptism, right? This is building a disciple brick by brick. And so we've got to be in it. If you need to hit pause and be like, you're saying you don't want to be a disciple. I'm not going to move on to the next one. Like, let's talk about that. Let's figure out, let's study this. Let's talk about where this is coming from and why you think you're a better guide for your life than Jesus is. And then we finish with the commitment. Will you do whatever it takes to get Jesus on that throne? And if they say no to that, the commitments are not just a token question, right? If you say, will you do whatever it takes to get Jesus on the throne? Yes. When can we meet next week? Right? No, like, what's it going to look like? What's keeping him off that throne? What's on the throne? What part of you is still on that throne? Because he may have my Sunday mornings and he may have, you know, my Wednesday afternoons, but he doesn't have my Monday mornings, right? He doesn't have my Tuesday nights at 2 a.m. when I'm on a browser and I don't want him, I'm incognito, right? You are never incognito from God, right? Like he needs all of your life, right? He needs every piece. And the reason is I wreck my life every time I control it. And he doesn't want me to wreck my life. And so if every time, if you have a horrible driver, if you are the world's worst driver, the more time you spend behind the wheel, the less safe you are, right? You need an expert driver behind the wheel. And I don't know where I'm going in this life. And I need an expert driver behind the wheel. And that's what we're trying to help them understand.